You're listening to the Kids Ministry Collective Podcast. Each episode of the KMC is designed to inform, encourage, and entertain those who love kids and serving kids ministry. We hope you'll enjoy today's podcast and maybe even learn a thing or two. Now let's join our team for this episode of the KMC.
Welcome to another episode of the Kid Ministry Collective Podcast. My name is Tom Bump, and I'm your host. And this is the second in a series of podcasts that we're recording with the guys from Ministry Accelerator. And I'm super excited to have them back because we're going to dig into another fun topic. So Jason Tilley, John Tillman, welcome back to the KMC.
How's it going?
Thanks for having us.
Hey, it's good to have you guys back on. And we wanted to dive back into our spiritual development series as we are continuing to challenge leaders to think about developing that spiritual growth plan for their ministry, but also helping families think about how they are discipling their children. You know, over the years, we've noticed a big change where a lot of ministries are just cutting and pasting, and there hasn't been a lot of true innovation when it comes to thinking about different ways to do ministry, and especially equipping families to disciple their children. And so we wanted to hit around the question today that hopefully is going to open up some ideas and some doors and some thought processes to help people start going in an innovative direction when it comes to families and discipleship. And so it was really interesting. We came across this quote from Andy Stanley that says, what's impossible to do in your field, but if it could be done, would change your business. And of course, we're going to flip that to ministry. And that's kind of the overriding question we're going to be talking about on this episode. But let's bring it to the family ministry, kid ministry context. So how would you guys do that? How would you flip that question and make it more relatable to our listeners that are dealing with kid ministry, student ministry, family ministry? Whoever wants to go first, I'll let you dive in.
Well, it's kind of like, my wife was reading the book, and I haven't read it in years, but she was reading it. And that was one of the things she put on my desk one day. She wrote it on a sticky note and stacked it on my desk.
Gotta love me.
But yeah, I love it. I love it. And it really became a thing. It was like, what would change our culture if suddenly we were able to do something that we believe is impossible? How would it change the way everything operated? And so what we kind of came around with was, you know, we kind of looked at it in our context and the kind of the problems we're working on right now. And the question we asked was, how might families studying the Bible together change our culture?
Okay.
So went down exploring that idea. And so that's kind of how we rephrased that question to say, okay, how might, and the might word is what I really love, because a lot of times people say how can or how could, and the response is we can't or we couldn't.
Yeah, right.
But when you
say
how might, it really opens up a door to thinking. That's not mine. I got that from an organization called IDEO. And it's where they do innovation for all kinds of things. They've been doing it for over 20 years. They created the mouse. So if you use a mouse on your computer, that's IDEO.
Okay.
They made that up when Mac was building the first Apple computers.
Very
they made
cool.
up the mouse. But they asked, how might we do these things? And so we said, how might families studying the Bible together change our culture? And we think it would change it in amazing ways. We think it would affect everything from childhood issues, performance in school, all the way to obviously the gospel being taught, being handed down from parent to child, a parent handing their faith down to their child. It really got me thinking about how we use the term parents discipling kids.
Uh-huh. So
I think you and I have talked about that before. And when I thought about that, I was like, you know, I had said, I think parents should be discipling kids. And I thought, with the different types of Bible illiteracy we see in our country, a lot of parents are coming back to church for the first time in a long time.
Right.
They may feel like that's an overwhelming responsibility.
Yes.
when you break it down, it's really as simple as you and your child learning about God and learning how to pursue Christ together. And so that means read the Bible together, praying together, talking about God together. So that's where we came up with the idea of, okay, how about families studying the Bible together or parents and kids studying the Bible together? How would that change everything? I think, you know, people, a lot of people go, well, you know, what would it do for attendance? I think it could possibly increase it, because that joining together with the body is a natural progression when you're becoming a disciple.
Right.
So it starts to take a greater priority over things that you realize have no spiritual depth. And so I think there's a lot of potential there. But so that's kind of where how we rephrase the question.
Yeah. So, John, yeah. What do you think on that? And why is this such an important question to ask?
Well, I think it, you know, Jason sort of hit on the might aspect of it, and the kicking in the imagination aspect of, like, what is the possibilities? What are the things that we could do? We think so, and I'm one that does this too. Like, I'm a very practical kind of person in a lot of ways. I'm usually thinking about the, even when I'm using my imagination about something, I'm usually thinking about the practicalities. Okay, how am I going to build that? How am I going to systematize that? How am I going to program that? And that's really not great for as far as creativity goes. It kills your creativity when you start to, like, try to program it, try to plan it out ahead of time. It's like when you're writing, you have to have a rough draft, and then you come back and edit it later. So I think the initial, what's really interesting about this is it doesn't, like, we're talking about family discipleship with it, right? We're talking about parents and children learning together. That's our answer to the question. That's, like, one thing that could change. But your answer to that question might be different based on your context, based on what your church is dealing with, based on what the culture in your city is like, based on what the needs in the neighborhood your church is serving are like. Right. Your answers will be, should be, different. So I think that's what's exciting about it, is that it is getting the creativity that we, you know, that we have from God engaged in a direction that will be unique to our context.
Yeah, and that's what we want to encourage people as we go through this episode. We'll put out the disclaimer right away that we're not going to give direct answers to this question.
Right.
You know, we're challenging all of our listeners here to ask that question. You know, what seems to be impossible? What might feel impossible in your field? But if you could do it, would change everything for your families. What would that look like? What would your answer be? So that's really right, guys. What we're trying to press today is to get them to say, ask the question, and then what in your context would it look like?
Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly right, Tom. Yeah, we're not presuming to answer, and we wouldn't even presume to say that you should even be pursuing what we're asking. It's really, what do you feel like God is leading you to do that you feel like is impossible? Right. But if you could do it, would change everything.
Right.
And I think that's, you're right. I think we need to say we're not going to answer that question for you. This is not the one question we should be answering. It's the one question you should be asking.
Yes.
So.
Right.
There you go. And that's a good way to approach it, because obviously, you know, as we look at when we, well, let's talk about, first of all, why should we ask this question? Because, I mean, a lot of people are just like, why would I want to dream about what seems to be impossible? Because they're going to get hung up on that word impossible. And that's why I like how you said it, what might be. It's better to add that into it, too.
And I kind of think that was inherent in Andy's question as well.
Yeah, I do, too.
And that, because we all know that all things are possible with God. And if God's leading you a certain direction, it may look impossible to you, But what looks impossible to you is not impossible with what God's going to do through you. So I think sometimes we can, you're right, we can get hung up on that. It's impossible. I kind of come at things from a different approach than John does. I am blissfully unhindered with how when I'm thinking things. Not always to our benefit, because that's like, I don't know if that's going to work or not. I have no idea. I can't tell you how many times people are like, well, how are we going to do that? I don't know. Let's just figure it out. But in our journey to kind of do these things, we kind of came across a process that we think can help you if you're trying to answer the question.
Okay, what's that look like?
Well, it's a process a lot of people use in innovative circles, trying to help solve various problems, whether it's an app or a program or a business model. This process is used by a lot of people, and I think it can work well for anything you're trying to do too. Whether it's figuring out a new ministry paradigm, trying to figure out how you're going to accomplish the answering of this question, this is just a few steps you can take that'll help you do that. The first one is you want to discover. You want to spend some time discovering. So if you've got an idea that you think is impossible to do, which you feel like this is something that would change everything if you can do it, the first question you want to try to figure out is, what's going on with people's lives? How are they engaging? What do they do? How do they spend their time? Like what we're doing right now is we're trying to figure out how parents spend their time with their kids. We're trying to sort out what a person's rhythm, what a family's rhythm's like. And if we can find some kind of predictability where we could insert scripture and the gospel and equip them to study the Bible with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're trying to do. We're in a discovery process right now.
Okay.
And so that's kind of what we're doing is we're trying to figure it out. But for a while that was what we were doing. We're trying to go in, okay. And keep in mind, I'm going to give you these steps. They're not sequential.
Right.
Even more like you'll bounce back and forth between them all the time. So this is where it can get confusing. People think, well, if I do this, then I do this. It's not a formula.
Okay.
It's a tool. Think of it more like a toolkit.
Okay.
So if you're building something and you say, I need my hammer, and you use your hammer, and then you say, now I need my screwdriver, and you use the screwdriver. And then a few minutes later, you go, oh, wait, now I need my hammer again. You're going to go back to these tools, right?
Right.
You don't just sit there and say, I've used my hammer. I'm done with the hammer on this process. And you walk away. That's anybody who's built anything knows that's not how it works. So these are your tools. Discovery is a tool. Spend time learning about the people in the community or even a ministry initiative. It's like if you get to know them, you get to talk to them, you get to ask questions about their daily lives. Basically, don't just figure everybody's like you, right? In fact, figure nobody's like you. And so you're an anomaly. And if you're in ministry and you're serving people and you're leading people to Christ and you're leading your family, you're an anomaly. You're not normal. So don't assume that just because it's what's true for you is true for everyone. So find out what is true for everyone.
Okay.
Spend some time discovering it.
Okay.
And then once you've figured out what people struggle with, then you want to define the challenges for those people and begin to choose one to help them with. So for us, we said, okay, we want to help the church. We want to help build sustainable faith in the lives of people. And one of the ways we land on that is we said, well, parents and kids studying the Bible together is one way we can help do that. That's what we defined. So that's when we came up with the question, how might families studying the Bible together change our culture? That's how we got there.
Uh-huh.
Another way we might phrase it would be, how might we get parents and kids to read the Bible together? That's another way you could phrase it. So there's a couple different ways there. But from there, we started brainstorming, what we call ideating. That's the next step, is ideate. So discover, define, ideate is the next tool in your box. And when you ideate, you're going to come up with some potential solutions. This is where you can let your creativity run wild. No holds barred. Everything from personally going to each house every day and leading this family through a Bible study together to some kind of online presence to whatever you think would be work. And then what you can do then is you take a bunch of your ideas.
Actually, not what you think would work, just whatever you think of.
Yeah, whatever you can think of. Yeah, don't limit that. John's right. No limitations. You just basically come up with every idea that pops in your head. And it's great to do this with a group of people. So whether it's your volunteer team, some parents, some of your fellow staff members, anything like that that you can work with.
Yeah.
And
that's a good, about that. That's a good, I'm glad you put that practical tip in there. That this would be a good one to get. Give everybody post-it notes and say, write the ideas and slap them on a wall. And
right. So, yeah. That's what you can do that. You put a time limit on it. You say over the next 15 minutes, we're going to come up with as many ideas as you possibly can generate. Then we're going to talk about them. Then I'm going to give you some dots or some colored pens, and you go and put a dot by the three you like the best. I mean, and then you basically can narrow down your field.
Yeah.
And you've got two or three ideas you can combine. It's great. The more diverse your group, the better.
Right. Right.
I mean, it'd be, have a grandma, have someone who hates kids. The more diverse, the better you're going to get ideas from places you never would have imagined. So get someone in your church that's a baseball coach. Get a youth pastor, get a senior pastor, get someone who's just passionate about art. It doesn't matter. The more diverse, the better.
Right.
And you get some ideas. And then you're ready to prototype. You just pick a method or combination of methods and you try something. And you do it small and you do it cheap. All right. We're not talking about launch a new program or start some major initiative. Because you don't know if this is going to work. This could be a terrible idea. And that's, we'll talk about that in a minute. But this could be an absolute bomb. So don't go and put everything you got into this thing.
Right.
Instead, less is more. So what we're doing, for example, with our trying to figure out if we can get families studying the Bible together, we got some churches and we're running a test. I pulled some videos off of YouTube that Saddleback did. So that it all looks uniform. I wrote a devotional around it and then emailed it out to the people to then send to their church, to the churches who then send it to their families.
Okay.
That's it. Costs nothing but time. Most of them are using MailChimp, which is free. And we're finding out that it's not, right now what we're finding out is we're not seeing a lot of fruit from that.
Okay.
So, we're seeing that fruit from that. We're not disappointed so much. Well, disappointed in the sense is, of course, you always want it to work. But not disappointed in the sense that, oh, wow, this is something we shouldn't pursue anymore. Just that didn't work. And the less of our investment in making it work, the easier it is to go, okay, you can look at it more realistically.
Right.
Because sometimes when we put a bunch of effort into something, our stress comes from the effort and the resources we've put behind it, not necessarily the fact that it's failing.
Right. And so I imagine that as you've done that process, then you now have some measurables to evaluate and go, okay, why, then you can start asking the question, right, of why didn't it work and why didn't the families respond the way we hoped they would respond and right. I mean, what are the questions, John, feel free to jump in. What did you guys do to figure out so that you came out with some learning things of where to take it next?
We're in that phase right now, though.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
We're not done with that phase yet.
Gotcha.
We have some questions out to the churches, and the pastors of those churches the children's ministry leaders are calling these families. We asked them only to recruit between 5 and 10 families because we didn't want it to be a huge time burden on them either.
Right.
And you don't need many more than that to really get a sense of how this works. They're calling and asking them questions revolving around how they spend their how they spend time with their kids and how they might possibly, when they might pray with them, when they might read the Bible to them. What I'll do, Tom, is I can actually send you the list of questions if you want to post it. Anybody can use them. If you want to find out more about what your families may be doing to mentor their kids.
If you'd like to test, be a test group. That'd be good too, probably.
Yeah, if you want to be a test group, let us know. It's not hard, and it's designed not to take a lot of your time. That was kind of our point. We want to be sensitive to how much time people have.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing right now. We're learning. We're trying to figure out. Okay, it didn't work just to receive an email and a text at certain random times. So maybe we need to be more pointed, more specific. The other thing we're looking at is, do we maybe have the prompt come from the kid and initiate from the child rather than initiate from the parent? We're going to play with that idea. But again, all we're doing is going back through the process and pulling out different tools.
Right.
Discover, define, ideate, prototype, learn. Discover, define, ideate, prototype, learn. And so,
lots of times you can go back. You can go back to that list that you made in the ideate phase.
Yeah.
And be like, okay, we tested, you know, option A and we tested option B and those didn't work. What else was on the board? What did we not try? And
yeah,
you go back to some of those ideas that you decided for whatever reason not to test those. Right. You go back and take a second look at those, add some additional innovation to it. I mean, it's like Jason said, it's not a once and done process on any of these steps. They're a step or a tool or a thing that you go right back to and, you know, pick it up again.
You may try something and realize we don't know enough about our people. We need to discover more.
We need to go back and get some data. We need to
spend some more time talking to people.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing about the discover phase, especially if you have to go back to the discover phase, it's great to try to get data from a different source than you did before. So let's say maybe when you did discover, maybe what you did was you sat down with five key families in your ministry and you did a little, you know, over coffee interview and asked them some questions. That's great. It's a great way to get to know some people and get some information, but that information is real anecdotal. You know, it's basically based on what they tell you. It's just a story. And you don't know that it stands true for a larger group of people. So maybe what you need to do is find a way to get some other type of data. You know, go to find out if there's been a city or government survey of your area that gives you statistics on, you know, how much time kids are in school, when are they in daycare, when do they come home, what type of devices are they using. There's lots of other types of data that you can pursue that's not just the personal. Or you can get data in another way. You can do like a more formal survey, like a survey that they fill out online. Use a free tool like Google Forms or something like that to distribute a survey where you get a little bit more spread out data.
Yeah, SurveyMonkey. Yeah,
SurveyMonkey.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. So if you're asking that question, you know, how might we and you start discovering things and you start defining, then that's where you work into the ideate stage, right? And then you're prototyping, and then you're learning, and you're repeating the process again. Let me ask you guys, how would you encourage somebody, because I'm sure some could feel like this could be overwhelming. Help them simplify the process a little bit so that they understand that this isn't, you know, this is important and it's worth the investment of time, and it doesn't have to be overwhelming. So how could they help? How could you help them out with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, one way is to do these types of do this type of work, this type of ideation work in what would be called sprints. So don't do this all of the time. You know what I mean? Like get I don't know, three times a year or whatever, where you spend you spend a week and you spend like an hour a day or a couple hours a day working on this type of thing. There are companies who they do that each year. They have what they call design sprints, where they come in and they are going to do a solve a problem in a week. And the whole company pulls together and a team comes together and they test the thing and they solve the deal and they get to the end. And at the end of the week, they got a product that they created and whatever. So you can do that. That's one way, is not to think of it as a constant process that you're always doing.
Okay, good.
But to do it in sprints, short times of focused attention on this process. And in one way, you are always doing it because you come back to it. I would come back to it rhythmically through the year, at certain times. But you're not doing it every single day, every single week, thinking about this type of stuff.
Okay, that's what better. Would you
say, I think to tag on to what John said, to kind of go the opposite direction as well, another way to help you would be to slow it way down. Don't feel like you have to be thinking does not equate to taking action. All right?
Right.
So you don't have to say, okay, I'm going to answer this question. Now I've got to discover. Now I've got to define. Now I've got to do that. No. If it takes you 3 to 4 to 5 months of a coffee here, a lunch there, a meeting here to do your discovery, that's fine.
Yeah.
All right.
That's good to say. I'm glad. Go ahead,
John. If you take what we're testing as an example, we've been working on this for a long time too. We're in the middle of something that is not a sprint, like what I talked about. Like it's more of a marathon, where we've been working on this for a long time of like thinking about this and getting some information and testing. And so, yeah, you can. I think that's those two very good ways to think about how can I do this. Good. One, spread it out, slow it down, take your time, mm-hmm. and the other is focus it. And squish it down into a single time period where you're going to focus on that.
Gotcha.
I think the truth is, if you can come up with an intentionality to do it, is what's most important.
Right.
To intentionally take time to stop, to think about your ministry, to ask the right questions, to figure out to spend time foremost in prayer. To figure out how you can accomplish the outcomes God has for your unique time and your unique place.
Right.
I think that is really the most important part. Is that what we often do is, like you said at the beginning, we kind of operate with blinders on.
Right.
We kind of just copy and paste what we've always done, or copy and paste what whoever did before us does. And we plow down the road, and before we know it, it's been 6 months or a year or 2 years, and we haven't really thought about why we do anything that we do.
Yeah. Oh, very true. Very true. Well, and I think the opposite is true, too, that we come home from conferences all fired up, ready to change the world, and we haven't asked all the questions, and we just charge into it. Almost the tyranny of the urgent, we let that urgency feeling overwhelm us without doing the steps to begin with. And that's why we end up getting caught and we have to walk things backwards, because we haven't done that. But I also think we get stuck in a rut because we're scared to ask these kind of questions.
And that's why I kind of, if I can point back to our last conversation together, about having a spiritual formation framework.
Right.
That will help you ask some of these questions, because if you're doing the spiritual formation framework, you're regularly coming around to saying, how am I doing here? How am I doing it there? And that's opportunity to think and ask about ways you can innovate in your ministry.
Yeah. I found more of this quote from Andy so I wanted to give some context to it and then I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on this. This is what he said that led up to this that question. He said, the only way to figure out how something can get done is to refuse to take your eye off of what needs to be done. Don't let how intimidate you. The fact that how is so challenging is the very reason it provides you with a great opportunity. As we said earlier, if the pathway into the future were well lit, it would be crowded. If how wasn't a problem, somebody else would already have figured it out. What is impossible to do in your field but if could only be done, would fundamentally change your business? Somebody needs to ask that question. Why not you? After all, unsolved problems are a gateway to the future. So to those who have the courage to ask the question and the tenacity to hang on until they discover it or create an answer to belongs to that future. So, you know, I think our challenge in this episode is to get people to start asking, especially in light of, because we do, you know, I think it's important that children's ministry leaders truly start asking that question. What's my plan? How am I going to develop spiritual, mature believers? And how am I going to help parents in that discipleship process? And what is it that may seem or feel impossible right now to do? How might we do it? How might we accomplish that? Because we do serve the God of the impossible. But I love how he said that, though, that you know, we've got to don't refuse to take your eye off of what needs to be done. If we know we need to help parents, we need to keep our eye on that ball and say, how do we do it? And so right. what do we have to do? What are the steps we have to take? What are the resources? What's the training that needs to be provided? What's the questions that are begging to be asked so that we can do this? You know, I like it. You know, if how wasn't a problem, somebody else would have already figured it out. Well, I don't think anybody has a perfect answer. And that's the thing that I want to ask is, you know, will this answer or even the question, I mean, is it going to look the same for everybody? Because like I said, we're getting into the habit of copying and pasting. Should we be asking the same things?
I think we should ask. I think questions like that are questions we should be asking, no matter where you are. But there's no way the answers are going to be the same. Right. I think that I said this before. We're kind of in a unique space and time wherever you happen to be serving. The combination of the people that God's put together in the body of the church you serve in are going to be there for something He's trying to do within your community. You can't expect that what somebody else is doing, even 10 miles down the road, is exactly what you need to be doing. So while I think the questions are very similar, I think the answers are going to be as different as every church there is, because churches are unique just like people are unique.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right, fellas. So what would be your advice to someone as they start launching out into this process and start asking these questions? And maybe, you know, are there any pitfalls that they should watch out for when they start asking these kind of questions?
That's a good question.
I stumped you too. Maybe it was a bad question. But
no, it's not a bad question, because you talk about one of the things that can happen is you can overwhelm yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's because there's no way that Satan wants you to succeed. There's no way the world wants you to succeed. Everything's going to seem stacked against you, because it is. All right. That's why Jesus said, if the world hates you, guess what? Hate me first. So there. So, yeah. I mean, we can easily overwhelm ourselves and say, well, that's just, you can talk about, I don't have the money, I don't have the people, I don't have the backing of my leadership, I don't know, you know, I don't think it's my responsibility. I mean, it's, the thing is that you could have 1,000 excuses to talk yourself out of trying something new or doing something, but if it won't let you go, if when you ask that question, it keeps coming back to you, kind of what you were reading from the book, then you got to pursue it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Just be willing to take whatever small steps you take in that direction.
Yeah. Right? Be willing to go slow. Be willing to fail. And then the other thing that I would say that is a danger is it's real easy to read, like a real inspiring passage like that from Andy or anyone who's like talking about creativity, and they're telling us how creative we are and how we can solve these problems and how challenges are opportunities, and all of those things are 100% true. And when they're spoken in that way, they're intended to be inspirational, and they're intended to, like, you know, kind of lift us up and get us going and rah, 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 and all that's good. But what we can do to ourselves is we can turn that around and, like, put it on our back like it's a burden. Like, it's my burden to solve this problem. It's my, if it doesn't get solved, it's on me. If it doesn't work, it's on me. I have to make this happen. And that is, you'll fall down under that burden every time. You will fall down under that burden every time. So you got to reach out for help and inspiration first in prayer, like Jason talked about. Prayer's got to be the center of how you approach any kind of innovation, but especially in ministry space. Prayer's got to be where you focus, and then reach out for help from your community, from your leaders, from whatever, you know, groups you're part of, from the KMC, from you know, reach out to us. Reach out for help and inspiration, and like you said, don't be afraid to go slow, don't be afraid to fail.
Don't be afraid to fail, you can't say that enough.
There's
a book called The Startup Way about the author Eric Ries was trying to bring a startup culture into a large corporation, and he recounts having he's a serial entrepreneur, he started tons of businesses. He's talking to this longtime manager in this big corporation, and he notices a coffee mug on his desk that says, "Failure is not an option." And he says, "There's no way I would have a coffee mug that says that. My coffee mug would say, I eat failure for breakfast." And he fails so many times. Don't be afraid of failure. We let the fear of failure keep us from doing anything. And what we're really afraid of is, I think we're afraid of getting it right. Because, you know, it's like, because a lot of times the big challenges don't happen when you fail. The big challenges happen when you get success and you have to go, well, what are we going to do now? How do we move from here? So if you're not failing, you're not trying. That's just a fact. And you will fail. And the thing I like to tell people, especially I work with, is as fallen human beings who have sin in our lives, we've already messed up and failed at the absolute worst thing we could do. We failed at eternal life. That was it. And we couldn't do anything to get ourselves out of it except for the grace of Christ and his sacrifice in our life. That's it. So you can't screw up worse than that. You just can't. So keep that in mind. You're like, well, what if I fail? What will people think? Oh, man, you already messed up. Already messed up. And God's like, I love you. I accept you. You have my grace. And so that.
Wow, that's good stuff. That's a great way to kind of wrap up, I think, this discussion, guys, because I think that some leaders out there, especially those, so many of them that are in smaller churches where, you know, it's them and maybe a couple others, and they would be feeling that burden because they already are, of carrying everything on their shoulders, and to start thinking about one more thing of how do I, because I think that's why, and we kind of talked about this in the last episode that we discussed the development plan of why leaders don't do it, is because they feel like, well, I'm doing all that I can for the kids. How am I supposed to do anything for parents? And so I think that those were some good words, both about not taking it all on your own, but also not being afraid to fail. I think taking it in small chunks, you know, the old adage of how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. That we have to, we need to ask these questions and not be fearful of asking them. But then we also need to not be fearful of moving forward in that process that you guys laid out, and taking it at a good sustainable pace, and because ultimately, again, it's why are we doing this? Well, we're doing it because we want to see the kingdom grow. About making disciples. So,
yeah.
Well, fellas, let's, as we wrap this up, maybe there are some people that say, hey, I need some help in this. I need help getting started, or maybe I started the process, I'm getting stuck. How can they get in touch with you guys? Because this is kind of what you do, is to help people walk through processes like this. And if somebody wants to be a part of this experiment and say, hey, I'd like to try this in my own church, let's see if it works. Because this is an area that we are looking at, is how do we get families to start studying the Bible together? That is one of the questions they're asking. How would they reach out to you guys?
You can find us on
Twitter at MIN Accelerator. And you can find Jason is on Twitter as well. Jason L. Tilly is his handle, and I'm J. Till Human on Twitter. And you can also just email us. Our emails are pretty simple. It's just john@ministryaccelerator.org and jason@ministryaccelerator.org. We don't mind getting your direct emails as well. That'd be fine.
Cool.
And we have a website, ministryaccelerator.org. So
try to keep it simple. There's also a Facebook group and all of that, but those are the easiest ways to kind of just, you know, at mention us or email us or whatever and get in touch.
Excellent. And if you're interested in, and maybe you've got a question that you'd like us to tackle, we're going to continue on with some series. We've got a few more ideas in this series of podcasts that we want to do with these guys. So if you've got a question that you'd like to throw at the team from Ministry Accelerator, feel free to message me on Facebook or on Twitter at PT Bump, and I'll be happy to throw it at these guys and see what their creative minds come up with. So, fellas, thanks again for taking some time out to be on the KMC.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Kid Ministry Collective Podcast. We hope you've been informed, encouraged, and entertained for these few moments. We'd love for you to connect with us on our Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group or subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It'd also mean a lot if you'd leave a review so we can help others learn about this podcast. If you want, you can watch this episode on video on our Kids Ministry Collective YouTube page. Our goal of the KMC is from Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Join us again soon for another KMC podcast.